Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Tuesday, the 8th of March, 2011, today being the two-month anniversary of the Tucson shootings. I'm Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL 1330, and we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We are live weekday mornings from 9 to 10, then we re-air the program from 7 to 8 in the evening here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes Buckmaster Show contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, mystery writer Elizabeth Gunn stops by to talk about her latest book. At the bottom of the hour, emergency preparedness expert Les Cade will be joining us. Then we close out the show talking about downtown Tucson with Michael Keith. He's the CEO of the Downtown Tucson Partner Show. Our show is primarily interview-driven, but there's always room for listener comments and questions. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. Well, if you have been sick this winter with a cold or flu, you're not alone. There's a lot of nasty stuff going around, believe me. We lead off the Buckmaster Show today with some game plans for avoiding getting ill, or if you are ill, what can you do to relieve some of the misery? Joining us now is Dr. Victoria Mazes, Executive Director of the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. She's also a Professor of Medicine, Family and Community Medicine and Public Health at the University of Arizona. She is an internationally recognized leader in integrative medicine. She lectures worldwide to academic and community audiences on integrative medical education, women's health, healthy aging, nutrition, and cancer. She is also the co-author of Integrative Women's Health, and she will be at this weekend's Tucson Festival of Books, Saturday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in the Tucson Room of the Student Union. She'll be taking part in a panel discussion on women's health. Victoria Mazes, good to see you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, have you avoided getting this cold? It certainly caught up with me, even though I take lots of supplements and things. It did bring me down for a couple of days.
Yes. Well, I don't think that there's any guarantees that we can put out that you would never, ever get sick. I think that's a false guarantee. But there are some things that people can do to reduce the likelihood.
How big a role does stress play in getting sick?
Stress is an interesting one. We certainly impact our immune system when we're especially chronically stressed. We have evidence across a wide range of conditions from the common cold all the way to AIDS that when you're chronically stressed, your immune system does not function as well. And so in integrative medicine, we really focus a lot on relaxation practices. Not that stress is never going to happen, but what can you do to mitigate it? What can you do to manage it? And we recommend things like breath work, meditation, for some yoga or tai chi. There are so many wonderful practices that you can develop to manage your own stress.
I know Dr. Weil, of course, he's the founder of your Center for Integrative Medicine. He's really big on breath control, and he's got some terrific breathing exercises. Very simple things, but it kind of just says to your system, hey, let's relax.
Absolutely.
And let's stop all this craziness and just kind of clears the head.
Absolutely true. And it's a fact of physiology that one can't be stressed and relaxed at the same time. And so if you do something as simple as diaphragmatic breathing, a fancy term for deep belly breathing, where you're really noticing that your belly rises and falls as you breathe in and out, that is going to have a physiological effect of activating the relaxation response. That's side of the nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system, that's responsible for relaxation. And something as simple as that, if you do it several times a day, is probably a strategy to reduce the likelihood of getting sick.
A lot of us do what they call shallow breathing, don't we?
Yes, we breathe in our upper chest, and that's really, really common. Awareness, you know, if you notice yourself doing that periodically, I know people who put a little post-it on their computer or their refrigerator that says breathe, and it's a reminder.
Time out, take a breath. It's 11 past the hour here on the Buckmaster Show. Victoria Mazes is with us. If you have a health question about colds or the flu, you can call us at 529-3508. How about herbs for prevention of cold and flu?
Well, so one of my favorite herbs comes from traditional Chinese medicine, and it's called astragalus. And I'm going to spell it because people get confused about that herb. It's A-S-T-R-A-G-A-L-U-S, astragalus. This is a beloved adaptogenic herb in Chinese pharmacopoeia. And actually, in China, it would be used as a food. It looks a little like a tongue depressor. It's a root. And you would actually cook it in a pot of soup during the flu season, and it would help boost the immune system. We know it raises white blood counts. It's very, very safe. It has a nice flavor. Now, in the United States, we don't typically cook it in our duck soup.
Right, we go to the vitamin store to get it.
Yes, and the good news is it works that way, too. Uh-huh. So you can take astragalus during the flu season. It's said to protect the exterior. It's very good at preventing respiratory infections, and the dose of it would be about 4 grams a day. So you might take 2 grams twice a day. By the way, this is a great strategy if you're getting on and off airplanes where you're being exposed to a whole host of people who may be carrying something.
So would it typically be sold as 200 milligrams?
No, might be sold really more as 500 milligrams, and you would have to take four of those twice a day. Maybe you could find 1,000 milligram doses as well.
But take it especially if you're thinking of doing some traveling, because we all know that, in fact, I actually saw a study about this, Victoria, that said on a typical flight, if you've got 100 people traveling on your airplane, at least 5 of them are really sick with a cold or a flu.
Well, the truth is it's very easy to spread colds or the flu. I mean, if you just touch the telephone, if you touch a keyboard, a door handle, all sorts of things on an airplane you can touch. If it's been contaminated with a virus, you can pick that up on your hand, and then if you touch your mouth, your nose, your eyes, you can get sick. And so one of the most important things to prevent yourself from getting sick is actually hygiene. Those alcohol-based Purell-like cleaners are a great strategy. Travel with them. Use them abundantly during the flu season. You know, when I was in family medicine, my patients used to say, don't get too close. I don't want to get you sick. And I used to say, I don't get sick from my patients. I get sick from my children. And the reason for that is that I was very good about washing my hands in between patients, whereas my children would slobber on me and I would get well exposed by them.
Talk about vitamin C. Linus Pauling, of course, was a huge advocate of mega doses of vitamin C to keep yourself well. I guess some of that has been... It's controversial.
Yes. I don't think the evidence is very strong for vitamin C in the cold season, but some people swear by it. And I would say I actually travel with little packets of emergency. I find that a very pleasant thing to add to some bottled water, and I'm getting vitamin C and a mixture of other vitamins and minerals. And I do find in my own life that it is a beneficial thing to do, but I wouldn't say that the studies are particularly strong for it.
How about garlic supplements?
So garlic is a wonderful food to be including both as a prevention measure, but also at the earliest sign that you may be coming down with something. I'm a huge fan of garlic. It has antiviral and antibacterial and actually even antifungal properties. The important thing about garlic is that you need to use fresh pressed garlic. So for example, don't swallow a whole clove. It'll really irritate your stomach and it won't work. Don't cook it extensively. That deactivates the garlic and makes it not useful anymore. You want to press it, let it sit for about a minute, and then you have some choices. For children, I recommend mixing it in with a little cream cheese and putting it on toast. And that's a very easy way. Instead of an onion chive cream cheese, you've given them a garlic cream cheese. For adults, you may want to put it in some olive oil and have it on bread. You might want to mix it into a salad dressing. dressing. You could put it into the very end of a stir fry, but it really has to be near raw or raw. If it's cooked, you will not get the benefit from it. It tastes yummy, but it won't have those antiviral and antibacterial and antifungal properties.
And garlic supplements?
I don't think there's good evidence for them in terms of a cold. They may help lower cholesterol, so it's not that they don't have benefit. But for the purpose of the common cold, you want to use fresh pressed garlic. Sometimes when you're feeling ill, that's hard on the stomach, and you just don't really want to be eating that.
And vitamin D, I know you're a huge advocate of vitamin D for many reasons. I guess it could also help prevent colds.
Yeah, the history of vitamin D and infection is very interesting. It was actually discovered that people who had rickets were more likely to develop tuberculosis. Mm. And that was the first indication that maybe there was a link between vitamin D deficiency, which causes rickets, and infection. We actually know that if your vitamin D level is below 30, you're at an increased risk of getting a cold or the flu. And so you want to get your vitamin D level up to normal. Of course, in the winter time, our vitamin D levels tend to drop because we get less sun exposure. So it's a double whammy, and you may need to supplement over the course of the winter.
If you're going to the doctor and you have a cold and you're feeling miserable, you may not come away from the doctor's visit with an antibiotic.
Well, if you have a cold, you shouldn't come away with an antibiotic because antibiotics
Patients, as you know, are right. going to ask for something. I need something to make this go away.
Well, so the truth is that antibiotics are against bacteria and a cold is a virus. So they don't work in that setting. Some people, of course, people with heart disease, people with bad lung disease, there may be a reason to put them on an antibiotic. But for others, the good news is that integrative medicine offers options like the garlic, like the astragalus, like black elderberry is another herb that has been used as a very nice black elderberry syrup. It helps shorten the course of a cold.
And you're going to be, we only have about 30 seconds. Again, a plug for you at the book festival, Saturday, 1 o'clock. You'll be talking about women's issues.
Yes,
I
will.
Women's health issues on a panel.
Yes, with Katie Lander, who's a graduate of our fellowship in an OBGYN in Tucson.
Okay. Dr. Victoria Mays, is always a pleasure. Once a month, we enjoy talking good health with you and health prevention and wellness. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right, coming up now on about 19 minutes past the hour. And speaking of the book festival, we have another one of the authors who will be at the book festival. Elizabeth Gunn will be joining us next. She writes a very popular, two police procedural crime fiction series. Back in a moment.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
It's 24 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Next on the Buckmaster Show, a conversation with Elizabeth Gunn. Miss Gunn writes two police procedural crime fiction series. One is set in Minnesota, where she grew up. Another here in Tucson, where she lives now. Kissing Arizona is her latest novel. It's a Tucson story featuring homicide director Sarah Burke. There are three Sarah Burke pieces in the series. Elizabeth will be appearing on two panels at this weekend's Tucson Festival of Books. Also on Saturday, she'll be interviewed by Mike Hayes, launching a new feature of the book festival, an interview with a local author. It's good to see you, Elizabeth.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations. You're going to be very busy this weekend at the book festival.
Yes, I am. But it's such a splendid opportunity for local authors that we so look forward to it.
Your Minnesota series, there are eight books in the Minnesota series, has a male protagonist, but you write in the first person. Is that very difficult?
It happens that it isn't for me. I just channel all my brothers and nephews. He's just a Minnesota guy in that voice, and I know that very well, so it seems perfectly natural to me.
Is cross-gender writing unusual?
Well, I guess it is a little bit, because I'm sitting on a panel this year with two men who write women, and the people running the festival thought enough of that phenomenon, so they put us together on a panel, and I guess we're all going to pick each other's brains about how hard is it and which things do you have to research the most.
Your Tucson stories are somewhat grittier than the Minnesota ones. Was that a deliberate choice, or did it follow from just the change of venue, you moving out to Tucson?
I think both. I did want to move into somewhat grittier fiction, because that seems to be the direction that it's taking. And, you know, come to think of it, that's the other panel that I'm on, is with two women who write and we're following a trend they call a trend toward noir, that women are moving into grittier or tougher fiction.
Tell me about Kissing Arizona, your newest book.
It concerns a couple of cases that my detective has to follow. It starts with a box of bones, which reflects a case that did happen here in the Tucson Valley a few years ago. But I used a device because I do geocaching. I used my geocaching team, and we picked a spot to put the box of bones, and we put a cache there. So that's a fun connection. But then it mainly concerns border issues and the young girl who personifies those border issues in my book. Is a girl who, this is a common thing too, she was brought here as a child and now she's a young adult, and her mother gets picked up in a sweep at work, and so they are deported. And she finds herself in a very small town in Mexico where she doesn't know the language and she doesn't know how to behave and she doesn't like anything about it.
The book is called Kissing Arizona. The author is Elizabeth Gunn, who is with us now. Elizabeth Gunn is probably the best, fittest 83-year-old person you would ever hope to be. You know, we just were talking with Victoria Mazes about women's health. I mean, you are a picture of great health at 83 years old and a late bloomer to the writing profession.
Yes, I am. I was. I earned my living as an innkeeper. My husband graduated from Cornell Hotel School, and I did the traditional thing for women of my generation. I helped him run motels.
How difficult was it for you to make that transition? The first book, I would assume, would be the hardest. Maybe it
sure, wasn't. Sure, it is the hardest because you have doubt sitting on your shoulder all the time. Can I actually do this? However, I had been writing and publishing travel articles because after we sold our business, we went traveling and we did a lot of adventurous things and went to some very interesting places. And I started writing articles about that and selling them to newspapers and magazines all over the country. So I had a box full of clippings that told me I could get paid for what I write. And I've been writing books ever since and saying that I want to get paid more for what I write.
Were you a big mystery reader?
Yes, I've always liked them.
And who have you enjoyed reading? Some of your favorite
mystery
writers?
Well, a couple of the favorites that are going to be here this year. John Lesqua, a very skillful writer who writes a lot about attorneys. Elmore Leonard,
I had the pleasure of interviewing Mr. Leonard at last year's book festival. What a very interesting guy. Let's, as we wrap this up, we've got about a minute to go. How would you like folks to, what would you like them to carry away from the newest book, Kissing Arizona?
There are two sides to every question about the border, and I think, at least it was my aim, I came down quite firmly on both sides because I do understand the people who have to enforce the laws, and I understand the reason for laws, too. And I make that point in the book, but I also have some sympathy, since I'm descended from immigrants, like all of us, for the people who feel they have to cross the border.
So, unless you're a native, you're from somewhere else in the United States.
Isn't right,
that the
yes.
truth? Sarah Burke, was there a model for this character?
For Sarah?
Yeah.
I think that Sarah is very much like two or three female police officers that I've had the privilege of riding with and talking to and visiting with in Tucson. I do a lot of work with police people and sworn officers, and I have come to admire them very much.
Kissing Arizona, Elizabeth Gunn has been with us, and she'll be at the book festival. Several panels, different events, so get a hold of one of the schedules and check it out, and you'll be signing lots of books.
Yes, I will.
Thank you, Elizabeth Gunn. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's coming up on 30 minutes past the hour.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. A deputy U.S. Marshal died in a shooting in St. Louis today. The suspect is also dead. He refused to give up when police went to a home to arrest him. Another marshal is in fair condition, and a St. Louis police officer was also injured. Gas prices are even higher today. AAA says the national average is now $3.52. Energy analyst Stephen Shork says people may not tolerate these prices much longer.
Gasoline prices retail above $3.30. Demand elasticities begin to wane. That is, consumers begin to alter their behavior, and you do see a pullback in demand.
Both sides now deny rumors of a deal for Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi to leave. Opposition leaders say they want to hold Gaddafi responsible for the crimes he's committed. Doctors say they see a lot of diabetes cases in the South. Researchers have identified it as the diabetes belt. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Member Michelle Bowman on the Sam's Club eValues Savings Celebration.
eValues lets me sample extra savings on top of the values I already get at Sam's Club.
March 9th through 13th, try eValues, the money-saving benefit plus members enjoy all year, like $150 off select HP notebooks, $50 off select certain mattresses,
even $1 off fresh strawberries,
and much more. Not a member? Join now and sample eValues. Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Supplies are limited and may not be available in all clubs. One item per membership, no rain checks.
Adventurous Americans, maybe you own a motorcycle, a boat, an RV, a PWC, or an ATV. Well, FYI, GEICO could save you money on insuring those vehicles. And here's how easy it is. You call GEICO and speak with a specialized agent about all the vehicles you own. The agent crunches the numbers. And if you're like thousands of others, your rate is less than what you pay now. And where I come from, paying less means saving money. Call GEICO today for a free rate quote. GEICO, saving people money on more than just car insurance.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
How about that new music that Rosemary Brand has picked out for the Buckmaster Show? It sounds good, Rosemary. Sounds real good. 35 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. The January 8th shootings, which left 6 people dead and 13 wounded, took place in a part of Metro Tucson with a patchwork of fire services. That unfortunate day was 2 months ago today. The Arizona Daily Star recently pointed out in a major piece that the response to the shootings illustrates a larger concern about how first responders communicate during an emergency, especially in areas like the Northwest Side that are crisscrossed with jurisdictions. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is Les Cade. Mr. Cade is the owner of the Tucson-based Fifth Phase Company. That's an emergency management consultant firm. Mr. Cade is a longtime Tucson Fire Department official who retired there as deputy chief, then was regional fire chief for Rural Metro for 4 years. Les, Cade, it's good to see you.
Bill, thank you. Great to see you.
You know, let's begin that horrible day two months ago today. Where were you as an emergency responder? That must have been a horrible feeling. I think you wanted to get out there, didn't you? You wanted to respond to the scene. That's what's in your DNA.
Well, you're exactly right. When I received the call early that morning, I understood something terrible had happened, not realizing exactly what. There was multiple shootings. Obviously, there was a congressional member involved, Gabby Giffords. I know Gabby personally for over 20 years, and as many people in this community do, she's just a personality. Well, I knew that I couldn't self-dispatch, so I sent out a couple texts, said, hey, I'm ready, but you know what, I don't want to go to the scene, become part of the problem. And as this developed, I sat in front of my television just mesmerized, watching folks that I know, watching a system that I helped put together respond to this tragic event. And it was very, very tough for me emotionally not to go down to the scene, but I knew I would have just been in the way.
If you kind of self-dispatch, as you say, I mean, people are going, well, what's Les doing here? He's not. I mean, as you say, you then become kind of part of the problem.
Exactly. And we've seen that time and time again in disasters, and that's part of the preparedness feature of the National Incident Management System is, ahead of time, find a role that you could play in a disaster, report to wherever that might be, if it's a hospital, if it's a voluntary center, if it's American Red Cross, but don't just go down to the incident and get in everybody's way. And it's a discipline, but you know, you have to practice it, and you have to make sure you're not part of the problem.
Well, as you point out, Les, you did help put this whole system together here in Southern Arizona. And how did it respond, in your opinion?
Well, I thought it responded very, very well. You know, when you're faced with a crisis, there's a lot of information coming at you very quickly. The incident commanders at the scene have to make split-second decisions. It's never easy, and there's always, after the fact, armchair quarterbacking. However, you know, when you look at the amount of patients and how quickly they got everyone out, triaged and to the hospitals, it was incredible.
35 minutes, I believe. Gabby Giffords was in an operating room 35 minutes after the shooting.
Yeah, that would be hard to beat anywhere in the country. Now, afterwards, the system should be put in place where everybody gets together and decides where they can make improvements in this. How can they communicate better? How can they just make the overall system better? And I think that's what the article in the paper was trying to get at. You know, when we do after-action reports after an event, or even a drill, we always try to say, how can we make improvements? And the first thing I do if I'm ever leading one of those particular events, I say, anybody that's ever been to a call and everything has gone perfectly, please raise your hand.
No one raises their hand.
No one raises their hand. There's always improvements that can be made. So you kind of take the edge off right there, and then you make sure that everyone in the room understands we want to make improvements and use best practices. And that's how you make improvements in the system.
We're talking with Les Cade. It's about 40 minutes past the hour. Mr. Cade is a former Rural Metro fire chief. He really, with the Tucson Fire Department, was the emergency preparedness guy. Now he is a emergency preparedness consultant. He travels really all over the world. He was in Malaysia talking about emergency preparedness. So let's go back to that day. We had a lot of jurisdictions, didn't we? We had Northwest Fire, we had Golder Ranch, Sheriff's Department. We had a lot of agencies, didn't we?
You had Pima County Office of Emergency Management. You also have all the shop owners that, you know, and customers that are at that particular scene. It's really a community event. When first responders are called in, the 911 calls comes into the dispatch center. That dispatch center, that dispatcher, is really trying to triage at that point what is the right information. There were different units that showed up at the scene that were called out for difficulty breathing because there were other individuals in the parking lot that were making calls on their 911 call.
Who were overcome emotion or whatever. And
exactly. Yeah. And so they were
anxiety
calling
anxiety attacks, anything.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So you had individuals responding not only to the shooting, but to difficulty breathing and the emotional trauma that's part of every event. There's two sides to every traumatic event, the physical side and the emotional side. So not only did we see the physical side, but the emotional side, and that's part of the recovery that we're all trying to get through even today.
To simplify this, Les, was there one channel that everybody could talk on, or was there not, and do we need that one channel?
Well, that's the challenge. Emergency communications is not just going to one particular channel at this time because you have various agencies working on UHF and VHF channels. So the National Emergency Communications Plan, which was put out by the Homeland Security and the Office of Emergency Communications about 2 years ago, is really driving home the point that communications interoperability has to be established by all the agencies within a jurisdiction. That communications challenge, and it's been a challenge ever since I was a firefighter starting out over 30 years ago, it has always been kind of the elephant under the rug. However, because communications is such a challenge, it's being pushed at not only the federal level, but at the state level. And Tucson and Pima County in particular was just recently tested through their Urban Area Security Initiative on their interoperability and their ability to communicate. They still have to make improvements like every other jurisdiction, but they're making those strides. But the day of the event, you still have the sheriff's office that were operating on a different frequency, potentially from Northwest Fire, Golden Ranch, Rural Metro. You have Southwest Ambulance involved. You also have Tucson Fire, which is responding up. You have Tucson Police responding up. And so it's not just a matter of the communications. There's also money involved. People have to, radios cost money, the frequencies, the FCC regulations. It's a challenge, but it's being worked on. But is it there yet? No, it's not. Can it be improved upon? Yes.
The Sheriff's Department had that unfortunate helicopter crash a while back where they were siting out some new locations for communications towers. Is that part of this plan too, the Sheriff's Department upgrade?
Yes, there's bricks and mortars, bricks and mortar projects, meaning that cell towers and the communications, but there's also, purchasing the radios, but then there's also policies and procedures, meaning the folks at the street level have to understand if their event happens, what's their tactical channel? What channel will they operate on during that event? What channel would be a command channel where the command officers under the incident command system would be able to communicate, and logistics, et cetera, all the way down. Officer or Agent Terry, when he was shot and killed down in Santa Cruz County, the same thing happened. You had various law enforcement agencies from all over the Southwest, all over the country show up, and they were unable to communicate, within the first few hours of the event. And it's a tragic story repeated over and over again throughout our country.
Only got about a minute to go, Les Cade, and we talked often after 9/11. We talked about emergency preparedness. You talk a lot about it. Are we making progress?
We are. The Homeland Security Presidential Directive Number 5, which established the National Incident Management System, the NIMS, is really pushing the not only interoperability, but training together, planning, personnel qualifications, communications and information management, technical support, and continuous improvement. So we are seeing these steps slowly improving everyone's ability to respond and communicate, but it's going to take time.
And everybody should have their own plan.
Everybody should have their own plan. It starts at home, taking care of yourself, taking care of your family, taking care of your neighborhood, and then hopefully public safety will have the ability to respond and supplement whatever you're not able to take care of.
Les Cate, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. And as we get closer to that 10-year 9/11 anniversary that's coming up, I'd like to have you back. We'll talk some more about emergency preparedness.
Bill, I'd love to. Great to see you.
Thank you so much. Coming up now, 46 minutes past the hour, we're going to talk about downtown Tucson right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroAmorePizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub. It's coming up now on 49 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show on KJLL 1330 and always on our fine website, buckmastershow.com. Within the last 3 years, some 40 private sector business people have committed more than $120 million to downtown developments, big and small. These projects have created nearly 1,000 jobs downtown, according to the Downtown Tucson Partnership CEO, Michael Keith. Mr. Keith joins us now on the Buckmaster Show. Michael, good to see you.
Good to be back, Bill. Thanks.
Tell me about how downtown is coming back, and it's being led by private investment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Without any really large overt signal from the public sector, the private sector is beginning to stimulate downtown on their own. I think there was almost a collective mindset that it was time to do something about downtown. In all fairness to the public sector, they primed the pump. When you look at the number of projects that they did in the last 10 years, starting with the Broadway underpass and the 4th Avenue underpass and paving all the roads downtown and the improvements to I-10 corridor and Scott Avenue improvements and the train depot, they restored the train depot. And a lot of these acted as precursors to what's happening now. And we shouldn't forget that, because the different government entities have been widely criticized for what hasn't happened downtown in the last 10 years, but a lot of what they did is created a pathway for what's happening now.
For those that don't know about your background, you've been a downtown guy. Mm. And tell us a little bit about that and the Downtown Tucson Partnership.
On a personal basis, I grew up in Tucson. My father's shop was in South Tucson, so I grew up in the downtown area working. Went to Saturday movies at the Fox. In fact, got my first kiss there as well, if you call it a kiss. I did a lot of after-school programs when I was a teenager. In fact, I helped in the Head Start program in Ochoa School. So I kind of have a lifelong connection to downtown. When I came back from the Middle East in the mid-'80s, I began to rehab out-of-service Adobes and historic properties, and I've spent 25 years as a small businessman downtown doing infill projects, mostly residential. Restored the Cheney House over by the Museum of Art and built the Franklin Court project catty-corner from El Charro. So about 30 structures in the last 25 years.
The Downtown Tucson Partnership, how has that program and that project evolved?
The Downtown Partnership is based on the Business Improvement District. There are about 1,400 of them around the country. Most of them came into being in the 1980s and 1990s when governments and private sectors were at each other's throat and nothing was getting done. And a lot of the downtown cores around the country were dilapidated and needed some kind of stimulation. So business improvement districts were formed. These are voluntary taxes that property owners put on themselves in exchange for usually a basket of services from the downtown alliances or partnerships or development corporations around the country. And they're all somewhat similar. You want to provide a clean and safe environment for people coming downtown. So we have the purple shirts. Phoenix has got the yellow shirts. Everybody's got something similar. So maintenance and security, public relations and marketing, and economic development. Those are usually the tenets of most downtown partnerships.
Rio Nuevo, and in many cases rightly so, has taken tremendous heat. A lot of money has been spent on when people see projects that really didn't come to fruition. How do we change maybe a mindset about downtown where people still, as you know, many will still say downtown is really the only place you want to go if you're only going down to jury duty or something. How do you get people to change their mindset about downtown?
That's a good question. It's the job of the partnership and other entities, government entities, to try to change that perception because things are happening so quickly down there. And it's you mentioned, you alluded to the economic miracle that's seemingly going on, but I think what's happened in the past is in the past. You can only beat that horse so many times. What happened 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago happened then. This is a little bit like beating up the U of A basketball team for losing to USC and UCLA. Well, you can't do that. You've got another game to play. You've got a tournament to enter. You can only dwell on these past problems for so long. We're in the midst of a small economic miracle down there, and to go back and over that over and over again of what happened 5 and 10 years ago just seems pointless to me.
The second Saturday program that has been developed, tell us a little bit about it and how is it doing?
Wow, talk about a success story. This was a reincarnation of the Downtown Saturday Night program that was in the 90s and into the early 2000s. It's an ongoing monthly festival, the second Saturday of every month. There are vendors and musicians, and the Fox Theater opens up for performances. I think the Rialto is coming on this month with a contribution. It's terrific. We're getting anywhere from 8 to 10,000 people every month. The people are coming down and looking around and realizing that they didn't know what was happening in downtown, that new restaurants and places have opened up they had no clue that were happening. So I think it's gotten the word out probably more than anything else we could have done.
The Downtown Tucson Partnership last fall surveyed really the people that were behind all of these downtown projects, for the dollar value of their projects, employment statistics, and comments about downtown, what was the overall result of that survey? What kind of comments did you get back?
We were stunned. I had done a presentation to my board, and then the council asked me to do a presentation to them about what was happening downtown. And so I put a small PowerPoint together, and then I went, oh, wait, I forgot this. So I put that on there, and then I went, well, no, there's this and this and this. And finally, I realized that even though we were working in this, things were accelerating so quickly that I couldn't even put a list together that was comprehensive because I knew three or four more projects that were coming down the pike. So we went out and we went door to door downtown. We interviewed every business that had either started or had finished in the last 30 months. And we asked them point blank, what did you spend? How long did it take? And why did you come downtown? And we were stunned. By the time we did the math, it was $120 million. You take out the $60 million that is going into the TEP Unisource building, and you've got $60 million of small mom-and-pop private investment going into downtown. This is without a convention hotel, without a ballpark downtown, without the usual big draws that governments tend to provide. This is happening almost organically and in response to everything that had gone before, as I mentioned earlier.
Are restaurants leading the way, people coming down to Maynard's or Hotel Congress?
They are.
Janos's new restaurant.
We've had Janos. We've had 47 Scott Hub, which is the big hit right now. There's a Thai restaurant about to open in the old Chili Verde place. There's another Chinese Thai restaurant that's opened up. There's a couple more being planned. There's people looking for 3,000 square feet to do a high concept restaurant. It's just we're hearing things every day about people that want to open another bar. There's a microbrewery going on over at Tool Avenue. It's just hopping. But the retail sector is coming right behind them. So as you probably know, Buffalo Exchange mm-hmm. is moving into the old Cafe Magritte space on Congress. We were hearing about some other specialty shops. There's one for street apparel, sort of skater apparel that opened up on Broadway. And I'm thinking that by September, all the primary retail space up and down Broadway and Congress is going to be spoken for.
That is somewhat of a miracle, isn't it?
It is.
So is there, when you look at the economic development, is there help for these new businesses in some kind of, do they get some kind of government breaks? Or is this pretty much being done on their own?
This is pretty much being done on their own. We are in the middle of developing a very extensive small business program at the partnership. We just put together a compendium of funding sources and incentive programs. We went out and surveyed and brought everything we could find in one place. We've identified 220 different programs. A lot of those aren't going to be applicable for things like mom-and-pop restaurants. But we're in the process of really developing that entire small business assistance program at the partnership.
We're about out of time, but is parking an issue now, or has that pretty much been resolved?
We've got another parking garage going up on the corner of Tool and Fifth. We just they just finished one in front of the new MLK building. There's tons of surface parking down there. We have to do a better job of getting the word out, but there's a lot of parking.
And Downtown Tucson Partnership, your website has lots of information.
Yeah, in fact, we're in the midst of redoing that website, so I think your listeners should wait about 6 weeks or so and then hit that website. It's going to be full of information.
Pretty much just DowntownTucsonPartnership.com, is that it?
.org, I think.
Oh, .org.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. We're going to have to run. Michael Keith, thank you so much. Michael Keith is the CEO of the Downtown Tucson Partnership. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. I want to remind you that the Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger CPA Firm. Have a great day.
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.